This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning. Welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabond. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much. Also joining us on the show, a regular, former Toronto Maple Leaf, former Washington Capital, and a few other pit stops, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Lou, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Wally. Good morning, Naz.
Alabama, a little tough game for them last night, guys. What happened? 6 rushing yards? Did I read that correctly? They're playing in the pit down at LSU down in Louisiana, but 6 rushing yards for an Alabama football team? What happened, guys?
I'm not answering that.
Lou, Naz is deferring to you, Lou.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell guys like yourself and everybody that's listening out there, when you got a target on your back every single game, you better come up and play with your A game, because the standard brand of college football is always to beat Alabama. It doesn't matter what other game that they play all year. It's just like the olden times when the L.A. Lakers or the Montreal Canadiens or the top teams in professional sports, everybody's out to beat Alabama. And anytime you can come close or beat them, that is your victory for the whole year, maybe even for 10 years, because some of these teams don't even get close to that team. But I'll take it for whatever it's worth. I think LSU came up with a great game plan yesterday. But at the end of the day, Alabama came up with a win. Now they've just got to get ready, because they know that their next match is probably going to be against Auburn. And then maybe if they get by Auburn, they're going to get by. Their matchup of the year is going to be against Georgia in the Southeast SEC Championship.
I think you've analyzed it perfectly, Lou. Everybody's up for the Alabama game. They are the standard in college football and have been, I guess, for 15, 20 years. So everybody gets up for that game, and as you say, they came out with the W, and at the end of the day, that's what counts. They look like they're headed to a massive, massive showdown with Georgia. In fact, that may end up being a preliminary in the SEC to a potential matchup in the national championship game. I wouldn't be surprised. Georgia and Alabama, they're going to line up once for sure and possibly twice. Let our listeners know where we're going with the show today. We've got coming up, it should be a fascinating interview with Dan Quinn. You may remember Dan from the 1980s, 90s. First-round draft choice of the Calgary Flames. Played a significant amount of his career with the Pittsburgh Penguins, with Mario, and the part of his career, I should say, his careers, the part of his careers that I'm most fascinating in was his golf career after he finished playing hockey, won some celebrity golf tournaments, ended up being a caddy on the professional, on the PGA Tour with John Daly and Ernie Els. I'm fascinated to talk about that part, that career that Dan Quinn had, and certainly get an opportunity to talk about his hockey career. Guys, a couple of weeks ago, we were in the dumps. Joe Bowen told us, let's hang in there. You know, things may look bleak for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Certainly, the last week, things are looking a lot better. We're on a little bit of a roll here, Naz. I think we're now 5 straight wins, and some key wins this week. They look much better. Great win against the Vegas Knights 4-0 on Tuesday, I believe. Then a remarkable comeback Thursday night against Tampa, winning in overtime. William Nylander, and a pretty good result against the hated Boston Bruins last night. Naz, we had that We had that lead that against Boston that always scares me. It caused me some consternation in the past. The 4-1 lead, they made it 4-2, but the Leafs hung in. Naz, your thoughts on the Leafs' week and how do we look?
Wally, I think the Leafs played their best two games in 2 years against Tampa Bay and Boston. They were phenomenal. Both ends of the ice, great goaltending. I'm impressed. They came back real well, real strong.
Certainly, when you got a goalie that, I guess the cliche, Lou, is when the goalie stands on his head, it makes everybody else look better. Campbell had to save that game for him against Tampa on Thursday night. Leafs were pressing. They were up the ice and giving up some opportunities, and Campbell held the fort. And then Tavares, I believe, scored the tying goal on a pass from Marner. And then Nylander fired one in the overtime. Important victory. Last night's game was played at I call it playoff intensity. It was a fun game to watch from beginning to end. These two teams don't like each other. Leafs haven't had great results against the Bruins in the last few years. It was an interesting, intense game to watch, Lou. Your reaction on the Leafs' week?
Well, it really was, and again, we're going to go back to what Joe Bowen said. It is a regular season. This team is more or less, it's all about the playoffs. It's not about the 82-game schedule, but you got to give them credit because they came up big when they had to. They took advantage of a Hedman dumb mistake with a little flip up the middle, and they scored the goal, the tying goal in the last minute. Obviously, they came up and they played really well. They took advantage of the players who weren't in the Vegas lineup, and they won that game pretty handily. And last night, they beat a tough Boston team in their building, knowing that it was more or less to try to send a message to the Bruins, guys, we're here, and we're not going to be overlooked. So get used to this. And they came up with another big win last night, and they're only going to go as far as their goaltending takes them. Mind you, every team's going to go that way. But at the end of the day, it is just one out of 82 games. Show me what you're going to do in the playoffs, and then we can move on.
Yeah, I know that show me what you're going to do in the playoffs, but you got to make the playoffs. And right now, the Leafs are in the two hole in the Atlantic Division. They're only behind Florida, but there's a lot of teams in the mix, and it's early. I get it. We get Harry Neal on the show from time to time, and Harry will always say, if you're going to win, your best players have to be your best players. And in the last five games, their best players have been their best players. I believe, Naz, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the last 14 goals that the Leafs have scored have been their core four. Marner, 4 points last night. He was under an incredible amount of criticism first couple of weeks in the season. 4 points. Tavares and Matthews, I know you posted an Austin Matthews tribute. The core four, much maligned in the beginning of the season. Joe Bowen calmed us down, said, relax, guys. Let's look at this 20-25 games in. And the top four certainly have brought it this week. Naz, I believe they've got all 14 of the last 14 goals.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. They're playing really well. And Boston's goaltending, oh my God, they're in trouble. They better get a goalie soon because they don't have a goalie there.
Well, we don't want them to get a goalie, do we?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to fault the Boston goalie for the loss last night. And the Leafs got themselves in a hole early, down one. They seem, so far this season, seem to always give up the first goal in the game. But they put their foot down, came back, and cashed in some opportunities, some crazy events in the first period with the Nets coming off the pipes. Didn't realize there was an NHL rule, Lou, that says if the net comes off and that one was really off and it comes off and the puck goes in, it's a goal. And in that one, I guess the rule is if the defending player knocks the net off, then it's keep playing. If the puck goes in, it's a goal. Lou?
I didn't know that was a rule either. It looked it really obvious that the net was knocked off. I didn't know that. I think Bergeron knocked it off at the time. And again, there's a lot of rules that we don't follow in the National Hockey League. So that's just one of them that more or less just opened up our eyes last night.
Yeah, I thought that one and the one with Jake Muzzin on the other end were sort of controversial, because I don't believe it was actually Bergeron that knocked the net off. It was Bergeron knocking Tavares into the net to knock it off. I mean, that's the way I saw it. And on the other side, Muzzin got all upset because he knocked the Boston player into the net, knocked the net over, and got a penalty, and then the Bruins scored on that penalty. So it was an interesting game. At the end of the day, we got the W, so things are looking better. We get the Kings this week, we get the Flyers, and we get the Flames, who are a hot team right now. Hopefully the Leafs can keep it going. It's 9:15. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back with Dan Quinn.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
You won't remember that Real Space Media was once Real Tours Media. What you'll never forget is how they helped you, the real estate agent, sell homes. Or you, the business owner, show off your four walls. Real Space Media has made a name for itself, creating virtual tours and walkthrough floor plans using 3D technology that's light years ahead. In the age of COVID, what better way to see a space safely than through the digital lens of, what were they called again? RealSpaceMedia.ca. Got a space to showcase? Check out Real Space.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in Toronto, 96.7 FM, and live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, Dan Quinn. Dan, good morning. How are you this morning?
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're thrilled to have you, Dan. I'm fascinated by your career, but I would rephrase that to careers. Obviously, you had a great career as a hockey player, first round draft choice in the Ontario Hockey League. I'm personally fascinated more by your career as a celebrity golfer, 5-time winner of that tournament down in Lake Tahoe, professional tour caddy for Ernie Els and John Daly, I believe, and others. Let's give it a shot. Let's see how much of this we can cover this morning, Dan.
Fire away. I'm happy to be on. Nice to talk to you guys up in Canada.
Pleased to have you on, Dan. I know I texted you yesterday and told you that Lou Franceschetti is a regular on our show. He'd be with you. He's a contemporary of yours in the 80s with the Washington Capitals. And after talking to Lou yesterday, I want you guys to let me know. I think the biggest question we want to ask you guys, just to have some fun when we start this off, Lou says he had better hair than you. Dan, your thought on that?
Well, we played in that era with the mullets, and there was times when I had a good head. But I'm pretty sure, Lou being Italian, he probably worked at it a lot harder than I did.
good. Lou, I got to get, that's a good comeback, Dan. Lou, I got to let you give your response.
Yeah, you're probably right, Dan, but mine's all gone right now. Oh, you still probably have your flowing blonde hair and your curliness there, and especially being down in Florida and playing in that celebrity tour out in Tahoe. You must have had a great time with all the boys. Because I played in golf tournaments where I've run into some of the older gentlemen in all sports, in basketball and football, and they're unbelievable personalities out there. How did you mix with all those guys like Mark Rippon? I can't even remember the names of the guys that you played with in that celebrity tour out in Tahoe.
Yes, well, I got invited. My first time we went out, actually, Mary Lemieux and I went out in 91. They had their first inaugural one in 1990, and we saw it on TV, and we're like, man, I got to try to get in that. And early on, so, you know, a couple of comments to your question. The early days, there was a lot more, like, Dale Tallon and Clark Gillies, Brett Hull, Tom Barrasso. You know, they had about a dozen, 15 hockey players. I think they're down to just four or five Americans now. They don't have any Canadians playing it. But over the 23 years, again, from 91, you know, having met, you know, first time out there, you had Johnny, you know, the Big Red Machine, Johnny Bench was there, and Joe Morgan, and I remember meeting Steve Spurrier was kind of cool, and then obviously some of the Michael Jordans and Charles Barkley's, and you know, my favorite guys ended up being a lot of the quarterbacks, John Elway and Dan Marino and Mark Rippon, as you mentioned. So it was, and it evolved. Luckily, like I said, I played till 2014, and then, you know, I get paired with Tony Romo's, and you meet, you know, Steph Curry was there, and some of the Aaron Rodgers. So the modern guys, you know, kind of went through a nice little 20, you know, quarter century really of being able to meet a lot of these guys, and it was always cool. Guys always end up hanging in the same sport, so the hockey players hang out with the hockey players and whatnot. But we mingled, and some of them I'm still friendly with, so it was pretty cool.
We're talking to Dan Quinn. Dan, I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Naz Marchese. Dan, just so you're aware, we're all doing this show remotely. We haven't been in studio for a year and a half, thanks to the pandemic. So I'll turn it over to Naz. Go ahead, Naz.
Dan, which sport do you like playing more, hockey or golf?
It's a good question. I mean, I was... Early on, you know, I fell in love with golf in London, Ontario. We moved there when I was 12, and there was an executive course, I guess you would say, and an 18 hole course called Thames Valley, right in London, Ontario. That I fell in love with it in the summers, and then hockey was, my quickest way to get out of the house and try to make a living. So, you know, you had to have equal passion for it. To say which one I love more, one was a job, became a job, but you know, I loved a lot of the hockey. I loved a lot of it. I didn't, but a lot of it, you know, the a lot of the traveling, you know, getting uprooted to a couple of teams where, you know, some places were better than others. But and golf, you know, to be clear, I never did make PGA Tour. I was, you know, a decent player, and you know, for an athlete that could play in some of these tournaments, I had some attempts at playing on tour school, and I went to, I lost in a playoff actually in 1999, I believe, to play in Doral, a PGA Tour event. I got a letter from the tour saying I would have been one of the first current or, you know, active athletes to have actually qualified for a tour event without getting a sponsor's exemption. But that's about it. I still love golf now, and I love it through the scene, through this. I have a 15-year-old boy that's pretty good, and so I've really enjoyed the last 3 or 4 years watching him evolve and take, you know, showing the passion to, you know, to work at it, work out in the gym. And so it's, and I, you know, obviously I live in Florida, I've been out for 20 some years, so it's become a big, you know, just part of our life. So it's a lot of fun. But, you know, again, hockey was a great sport. It was some of the best people I ever met in my life. I'm sure Luke can attest to, are still people that I played with back in the 80s and 90s. You know, albeit it was a barbaric era, you know, from the way the game was played. But, and then watching the game now, I watched two, you know, the Carolina and Florida played last night down here. It's a pretty good game with two 9-0 teams. The game's in a great spot right now.
Dan, I noticed you use, I listened to some of the other podcasts you've been on, and you refer to the 1980s as the barbaric era in hockey. I know hockey's changed from why do you use that particular adjective?
You know, I use it, I don't know how else to explain it, but when you have, you know, when I first started in, you know, OHL and then my first couple years in the NHL, I'd said on one of my podcasts, you know, I started in Calgary, the Battle of Alberta. Well, in the Battle of Alberta back then in the 83, 84, 85, we would have two exhibition games with each other, 8 regular season games with each other, and 2 of my first 3 years, we had 2 7-game series in the playoffs. So as Lou can attest to, in those games, one or two of those games is going to get to be 7-1 in the second period, and that's when it got, you know, pretty crazy. When I use the word barbaric, also, we had five-on-fives. We had bench-clearing brawls. You know, you had a lot of stuff that was kind of evolved in those areas. And there were some great, I mean, I always say some phenomenal hockey players that were great fighters, and the McSorties and the Bob Proberts and Dave Semenkos, which I tip my hat to. But that's basically where, you know, but there was, you know, guys that I'd made sure I had the 10-foot rule, Ben Wilson and Dave Manson. I was like, here, I'll just change quick and dump it in.
No kidding. Dan, I've got to, before I turn over Lou, do you ever remember any encounters, with Mr. Franceschetti?
No, you know what? It's, you know, Dan brings up a lot of points regarding the divisions back then, because we had the same problems with Philadelphia, where you might have two or three skilled players in the exhibition, and all the rest of the guys were all tough guys that you drafted, if you want to so call them goons. And there was a lot of bench clearing brawls, probably in the Battle of Alberta, and also with us playing the Philadelphia Flyers. But I just remember Danny as a very, very skilled centerman with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We didn't play Calgary that often in that era, but when he got traded over to Pittsburgh, I more or less remember him. And you know, there was game plans that we had to stop him and Mario, more Mario than Danny. But it was an unbelievable era for us, because I like to think that that's the way the game should be played, even though it's as highly skilled as it is now. I just want to ask Danny, how was it playing with Mario? Because I've met Mario through a couple of golf tournaments in Long Island. And how was your time there in Pittsburgh, knowing that Mario and your crew there were, it was all about Mario and everybody else?
Yeah, no, but it was one of my biggest regrets was having been traded from Pittsburgh. I loved playing there. I called the city home when I got traded there in, you know, fall of 86. For 15 years, I kept a house there, even after I got traded away. And then to your point, I mean, you know, you're traded from the Devils, the old Schmeich division, I think, then what we were in Pittsburgh and you were in Washington, was the old Patrick division. Was a lot of, you had a lot of great players too, with, you know, Scotty Stevens, Hatcher, and, you know, I can remember all, Bent Gustafson. I can remember a lot of the, Mike Gartner. So it was really good hockey. And to your point, you know, that was a great division as well. As far as Mario was, you know, I got there in 86 and 87, you know, didn't make the playoffs. Didn't have, you know, it really changed when he went to the Canada Cup. I've always said that in the fall of 87, he got to play with Messier and Gretzky and Paul Coffey and all of those guys. And he came back to training camp where and just was flying. And, you know, I think it really catapulted his career to not only wanting to know how good he was fitting in with those that great group of players, but he got the taste of winning. And I think that's when he really, really, his career really took off. And then, you know, there was a lot of things that said about, you know, there was a big trade that they made for Ronnie Francis and Samuelson, but they grew internally. You know, Mark Recchi and Kevin Stevens, you know, there was Zardy Zalapsky. We had a lot of really good players that came through the Eddie Johnson drafts, you know, and back then. And then obviously, you know, Paul Coffey getting traded there, Tom Barrasso. You know, there was a really solid group of players. Unfortunately, I was traded away in 90, and then they won their cups, you know, a couple of years later. But I think, you know, Lou, I always say this. I got three guys. I always say Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and Mario Lemieux. You can throw three in a hat. There's the three best players, I think. And I'll always say that physically, though, I don't know that I've ever seen a better hockey player than Mario. Just being 6'5", and, you know, 225, 230, fast. I mean, faster than you can ever imagine. Great hands, could stick handle. I mean, you know, you saw McDavid go last night. Mario would have had five hooks on him. But that goal that he scored, that highlight goal, yeah. McDavid got, he would have been chopped and slashed and hooked, you know, back in our days. So not belittling how great a goal it was for McDavid, but I think you remember we got a lot more use of our sticks back then.
Ned, you're absolutely right in the sense that I thought Mario, and I still think Mario, is the most talented hockey player that has ever played this game. And that 87 series, when he came back, you could see that he was a different guy, because he got to play with players that knew what the commitment was to be an excellent. And when you play with Mark, and you play with Wayne and Coffey, and being coached by Keenan, who was a coach that was driven at that time, you could just see a different hockey player coming back. And he pretty well carried your franchise there for a couple of years. I know you guys always ended up near the bottom, but when they made that big trade with Ronnie Francis and also drafting Jágr in 1990, pretty much turned that whole franchise around.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
Tell us your experience caddying for Ernie Els, Dan.
Sure, yeah. We, long story, Ernie moved here in 2008. And I say here, Jupiter, the Jupiter Palm Beach area, west, just north of West Palm Beach, which is now home to, Gretz just bought a house here. So from Michael Jordan, Dustin Johnson, all over the last 13, 14 years, these Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, they all live in this area. But Ernie was one of the first tour pros to move here based on his son being autistic, and his home was in the U.K. So long story short, I helped sort of get a residence for him for a time being during the Honda Classic in 08, and he ended up winning. That led to sort of a friendship, and the role that I had for a company a golf course called the Ritz-Carlton in the subprime crash of 08-09 was eliminated in January of 09, and somewhere in that summertime he asked me to say, you want to go to Asia and caddy, because I'd done some caddying for Daly and Jesper Parnevik in the past, as you alluded to, and we ended up going to Singapore and I was nervous. I'd never been to Asia and those kind of places, but we finished I think 12th, and then we finished second the week after in a World Golf Championship event, losing to Phil Mickelson by one shot. And then we had a Christmas break, and I got a call over Christmas, hey, you want to do that again? And I said, sure. I made $72,000 in those 2 weeks. I said, I'll do that. Yeah. Where's the bag? I got, I'm going to meet you in San Diego. And we actually started in Hawaii that year, 2010. So that's how it started. And, it's like everything, ups and downs. And it was something that I really prided myself on, not just being a friend out there caddying. I knew the game of golf, and I studied it and tried to really do a good job professionally as a caddy. I treated it as such. And it was a good little gig for a couple of years, as well as having, I still played in Lake Tahoe then, so it gave me plenty of time. I'd only work 16-17 weeks for him, and then I'd have the rest of it to play golf and prepare for Tahoe.
Dan, I'm actually the golf junkie on the show, so I could spend the next 3 hours just talking golf with you. And
no,
you've got so fascinating careers in a little different ways. But I want to get back to the golf part of it, and we'll sort of go back and forth between the golf and the hockey. You got the opportunity to caddy for Ernie, and you mentioned Jesper Parnevik actually played behind him on a golf course in South Florida. He was having fun with Hank Keeney and a whole bunch of other guys. The caddying part of it. We've interviewed professional golfers on our show before, but we've never interviewed a caddy. And I've always been fascinated growing up being a caddy in my youth. How much difference does a caddy make to a golfer's performance? Can a caddy actually win a tournament for a golfer or lose a tournament for a golfer?
Well, I always say this when somebody asks me that. The best way to be a good caddy is to have a good player. That's number one. So, most good players, the profession of caddying has evolved with the Tiger Woods coming in, and now the purses are so much more. I think if you look at the guys that are caddying, they're a fit. They're actually could be ex-players because, it's good money. If you get a good bag, a top 50 player in the world, you're going to work 25, 30 weeks a year. You're going to have another 20 off, but it's good money if you get you're outside and you're kind of just the one boss. To your point or your question, absolutely a caddy is crucial. You've got to be kind of one step ahead. You try to do a lot of the preparation that the player's getting his body ready and worrying about swing. So you try to have as much knowledge from, I tell people when I caddied at Augusta in 2010, I'd gone out and checked where all the tees were on the par threes so that when we got to the par threes, I knew exactly what the yardage was to the hole so that, I didn't have to wait, he didn't have to waste time and get any, tension or nervousness standing on that 12th tee at Augusta. I already had the yardage. I already knew exactly what it was, the wind direction, so that, I could give him the information and he could pull his club and hit it without standing around. So stuff like that. And there's a lot of great caddies out there, and you've got to be good company. There's a ton of conversation that you can't go quiet. You can't just walk around out there. You've got to have a lot of stuff that that they're interested in and get their minds off of what they're doing on top of giving information. And sometimes you got to give them a, you know, a gentle tap in the back, and sometimes you got to get, hey, let's get going type stuff. So it's a fine line because, you know, at the end of every round, you know, it could be your last round. There's no real contracts. So you have to try to do a good job, not be a yes man. You have to give, you know, again, provide information, which is, it's kind of evolving. I see they're taking away the green books, which I really commend them for, you know, took that art away of knowing how to read a green. It had gotten so, these green books were like, I mean, encyclopedias of information. It was unbelievable that how much information's in these yardage books that the tour pros get. So, but, you know, again, I come back to my comment, you know, a good player and a good caddy is much better than, you know, if one of them's not as up to par. You know, you need a good caddy if you're going to be a good player on tour.
Yeah, we're talking to Dan Quinn. By the way, guys, I've just been advised by our producer that, in his opinion, Al Iafrati had the best hair in the NHL when you guys are playing. So he certainly had a long mullet, if I recall. So Al Iafrati, guys, I think had the best hair in the NHL. Lou, I'll turn it over to you.
Dan, I don't know what the job of a caddy is, but do most caddies, are they pretty good golfers? And you know how sometimes our equipment is the most important stuff towards our sport? What is a caddy's life from Monday or from Saturday or Sunday, whenever you guys finish, till the Wednesday? Who takes care of the clubs? What do you do with the clubs? And obviously you have played Augusta. Give me your experience of playing that golf course, if caddies are allowed to play it when you're there.
No, we're not. I'll come back. I'll work backwards. Augusta, you know, you have to still go with a member, and the week of and the week before is very, very strict as to who gets. Not even all the members are allowed to play it. So, but I did. We went up there, and you know, I went up there 2 weeks before the Masters in 2010 with Ernie and Charles Schwartzel, and we flew up just for the day. So that was my, and I'd been to Augusta. One of the first things I did when I retired from hockey was I'd go there during the Masters in 98, 99, like for 4 or 5 years on the Wednesday, just because it's a pure, you know, as a fan. But then so this particular year, we went up and played the golf course prior, had the yards booked. So to say that, you know, by the time we got there Monday afternoon of the tournament week, because we'd played in Houston the week before, we were ready, and I couldn't wait to pull that first yardage on Thursday, because to your question, Tuesdays, Wednesdays are long, long days for caddies. Players are out the range. They got their strength coach. They could have, you know, it's a lot of time to, you know, sort of wait to get, you know, get for the real stuff to happen on the Thursday morning. Generally, Joe, as far as equipment, it depends. You know, I was lucky with Ernie. He flew privately, so the clubs were always either on the plane or, you know, back here at his house. When we're on the road, I would take, you know, if I had rent a car and I was staying somewhere separately, and yeah, I would always have the clubs, or you leave them in storage at the golf course if you trusted the place. And you have, you know, funny thing about a guy like Ernie, he gets the long putter there in the second or third year that I was caddying for him. So he'd have some of those, sometimes three or four of those big long putters in there. So on Tuesday, my bag weighed a lot of, way too much, I got to tell you. But that's sort of the nuts and bolts of it. Every player is different, and every caddy does as much as, you know, the player wants them to do.
Yes. Who are some of the better golfers, hockey players, as golfers?
Well, for me, I always, you know, Tahoe was won by, there's only been two hockey players win it. I got it 5 times, luckily, and Mario won it once. But I've always, there was a Norm McIver I played with in the early 90s, and I thought he was a heck of a player. He had a beautiful golf swing. I don't know if he ever worked at it, but I've heard that Ray Whitney's really good. You know, there's a bunch of them. You know, Gretz tells me there's a bunch of them live up in a place up in Coeur d'Alene in Idaho called Dodger Ranch where they play. So, I'm 56. I'm out of the loop. I don't know which ones of the current players are playing, and I don't know other than, you know, is there a way to measure it in any case. But I've always thought that everybody always said about it sort of speaks to the athleticism of a hockey player in a sense. I played hockey left-handed, and I played golf right-handed. And a lot of guys do that, and I just think that the overall ability to play hockey doesn't necessarily make you a good golfer. But if a guy does want to apply himself, you know, our bodies are pretty, you know, set up to like a tour coach.
PGA Tour, you know, the NHL has a lot of characters, two of whom are on the show with us today. Tell us about some of the characters on the PGA Tour. I'm sure these guys got personalities. Which guys were the most fun to be with or be part of the same group that you were in?
Well, I'd have to say, good and bad. Ernie was one of the he could be tough. Don't get me wrong, and I'm not going to say anything. I'll leave it at that. But he was one of the funner guys. That if you had you want to play golf and then sit around and have 5-6 beers and tell stories, he was one of the most engaging as far as that goes. Jesper was a character, no question. Loved to throw parties and barbecue. I've met a lot of them on both sides. There's a lot more characters in Europe than there are. They're a little more robotic here in the U.S., I would say. I worked in Europe for 6 months, which was a lot of travel, but it was a lot of characters, I must say. Some of the Scottish caddies, after 2 beers, I didn't understand a word of English they were saying. So they get a big sock on their tongue, and it was just, forget it, thick accent. But, there's John Daly was a character. I'm going back to my guys, that are Timmy Herron. I don't know if you ever Timmy.
Yeah, sure.
Herron.
Absolutely.
He's a beauty. I think they're a lot more. I'm a big fan of the modern players. Like I said, I've lucky enough been around Rory since 09. We were paired with him. Actually, that first trip I had to Asia, he was just a 19-year-old kid. He's one of the classiest, nicest kids you'll ever meet in any sport. Justin Thomas lives around here. Great kids. I think DJ's a heck of a guy. I mean, people don't really know him because he's so quiet, but I've gotten to know him, spent a little time over when Wayne's in town, because Gretz, I don't know if Dustin, I think you know that, Wally, because Gretz just bought Dustin Johnson.
No, I wasn't aware of that. Looking forward to, hopefully I run into him sometime back down in South Florida in January.
Dustin bought a bigger house, and then Wayne and Janet just bought his, so there, or theirs, I guess, in Paulinus, but, so that's sort of what we're doing down here, and it's just an interesting time to see the way golf's evolved and all of the guys that are they're fit. They got trainers and chefs. It's just Lou. Like I even heard when I remember Mike Vernon told me the guys on the NHL teams now have 2 chefs in the locker room. I'm like, we're running out to Houlihan's or McDonald's after games just to try to get a bite.
Lou, I'll turn it over to you again.
Dan, you would not believe the way these players get catered. That's why I don't have any sympathy for them at all. Like, they complain about playing 3 games in 4 days, and they have to charter. They get their breakfast made for them when they get to the rink. They get their lunch made for them. They have a chef there. It is unbelievable how these players get catered to now, and they still bitch and moan, if I can use that word, at their schedule. They play 4 games in 6 days. Not like us when we had to travel commercial. They travel charter. They have gourmet meals after a game. But anyways, that's beside the point.
Yeah. We flew commercial and people still smoke.
There's a big misconception on Phil Mickelson's personality. How robotic is he, or does he actually have a good time if you've run into him?
Say that again. Sorry, I was talking. Who, Jeff?
Lou, go ahead.
About Phil Mickelson being a little bit robotic and having no personality at all. Is he really like that in person, or can he loosen up get him one-on-one on an off day?
Yeah, so I don't know Phil very well, like I said. But we got paired a lot, and him and Ernie are the exact same age, so they had a little bit of a rivalry. So whenever we were paired, it was quite quiet between us, if that makes sense. But from all accounts from the guys, Phil is he's very engaging when he needs to be and wants to be, and he's also very he's one of the pranksters, from practice rounds and stuff like that kind of evolved. He's 51 now, but he still gets along with the 30-year-olds, so he's really maintained a presence on the both tours. Now he's out on the Champions Tour as well, but he would definitely be one that people love to watch. We used to say you could tell when you're at Augusta or big tournaments, there was 2 different roars. There was a roar for a birdie, and then there was a Tiger or a Phil roar. And it was, by the sound of the gallery, you could hear it. If it was one of them had made a birdie, you could tell. He's certainly one of the more popular players, in the history of golf. And I always say, too, to win as many times as he's won in Tiger's era is, it's quite remarkable.
Nez?
Are you impressed with the quality of the Canadian golfer now, Dan?
Yeah, my son's a really good player, but the thing to me that gets overlooked, if you look back at the, I've watched golf since I was 12 years old. Obviously, they all hit it far, and obviously, the equipment's really good, like Lou talked about, and it's, they get it all, whatever they need, it's all tweaked and it's perfect, but they just all putt well now. It used to be, if Tom Watson had the yips, or Bernard Langer, the guys back in the 70s and 80s that I grew up watching, there was always somebody that couldn't play for a while because they just had putting problems. And, they've all turned, they've got all these claw grips and the different equipment and these mallets and whatnot. I'm just even though they've taken the belly, which is all that stuff, and locking, anchoring, whatever they call it, but I'm just shocked at you just don't see any good players that are all good putters now. It's just, that's what really is my, I think it's lost on how far they hit it.
We're talking to Dan Quinn. Dan, a few more minutes. Don't necessarily go away from the golf conversation, because I got to tell you, I find this fascinating. I wish we had way more time with you, but our time's coming up shortly. But I do want to get back to hockey for just a minute. You got the opportunity, as you say, to play with one of the top three players of all time, if not the best player. I tend to agree with you, Dan. I think pure talent-wise, maybe Mario may have been the best of all time. Certainly, very, very arguable. But Mario wasn't. You got to watch him in practice and training. He didn't have the most strict training regimen, did he? It's not like he would. Go ahead.
I think the podcast did. I think Wally's got the thing to call me on. But I got traded to Pittsburgh, and Lou, I remember these days we're talking about commercial flights. But Mario smoked in between periods. and then I was like, finally, and I'd come from Calgary, so I like to think I sort of infused a little bit into the turning around of the Penguins from, like, they didn't wear helmets in practice, they didn't wear shoulder pads in practice. And, there was just, I was in quite good shape from having been in Calgary where, Bob Johnson in 83 or 82 was the first one that, started doing physical fitness training and MVO2 and all that. It was sort of the birth of all of that stuff. And I get to Pittsburgh, and, it was mind-boggling. And I was like, guys, I don't know what you guys, but I just spent like 2 hours north of me. There was a pretty good hockey team up there, and they're not smoking in between periods, Mario. So he quit. And he never, I told somebody, we went to run a track the following year, and I said, I'm going to go do a couple of miles, and you want to teach. He did one lap, and that was it. Get into hockey, but just could get into hockey shape like the great ones all could. I mean, Mario and Wayne, they had lungs on them like you can't believe it. I don't know how they did it, because Wayne wasn't really a big workout guy either, but they could play 30 minutes a game back in the, they didn't have their shifts time, did they? They're like Lou's talking about. They just looked at the coach, and if the coach looked at them, they just hopped the boards, and away they could play as much as they want. And once they were in hockey shape, they were just unbelievable.
Lou?
You couldn't have said it any better. When Mario first got drafted in 85, you could just see he had no drive whatsoever, and anytime he really wanted to turn it on, he could be the difference in the game. And obviously playing with Mario and Mark and them in 87, it came down to the commitment to getting ready to play in a world championship, and he probably had to do that in the summer to keep up with them in that tournament. But it was just mind-boggling on how much he could actually play and at the skill level that he had back then. But I want to get back to your golf. How hard do you push your son? And like, what are the parameters there that you go with him if you want your son to go to that next level, being a hockey player? How much do you go over and push it in on the golf sense?
I struggle. He's my third child, and the first two are daughters. So I never, it's my first kind of experience of these last, 5-6 years. And I actually spoke to him on Tuesday about it, as I look back to when he was, 11 or 12, and U.S. kids tournaments. And he would shoot high scores, and I would get frustrated, or my body language would be not appropriate really for what I should have been doing, and you think back to that. At the same time, I always apologize to him. Lou, it's a good question. I said, son, you're in the car. I'm just not that dad that's going to pat you on the back and say good going when I know you're much better than you did today, or good going, you had a horrible day. I'm not that dad, and I don't know how else to tell you that. And that comes from having played pro sports. So I think there's a mix. I've tried to do. I can still. I don't have to push him anymore. I never pushed him. Always, if he wanted to play or practice. So that's one thing. It's not my desire that he plays golf. It's his number one desire that's sort of taken off. He's taken it off. And COVID really helped him, because it was a sport that they you know, a year and a half ago, it was Florida opened up pretty quickly, and there was places you could play, and there was no other sports. And I was doing a spring hockey program at the time, and I haven't been on the ice since March 19th last year, so 2020. So, to, you know, and he was 13, now he's 15. So it's really evolved to where, you know, I'm going to brag now. On the last two Mondays, he was tied for low districts in high school as a sophomore here in Palm Beach County, and then last week. Last Monday, him and his team, he tied for fifth in regionals, and now he's going to states as a sophomore. Next weekend, we're going up to north of Orlando. So he's really gotten to where he can play some pretty high level golf, and you know how hard he works at it. And the key, but the thing about golf is, you know, I keep teaching, try to get him is the etiquette part of it. You know, if you're that kid that's always throwing a club on the ground or dropping, you know, throwing your ball at your bag, you know, nobody's going to want to play with you, and you know, that kind of stuff. I did it. We all did it when we practiced for great clubs and 15, 16 years old and throw stuff off. But then you kind of realize that you can't act like that. And so he's gotten a lot better at that. So that's basically all I do. As far as teaching him, I don't, there's three things I always believe in golf. You know, you got to have a good grip, you got to have good alignment, and you got to have good ball position, and everything else he's going to grow into. But he's got a great swing and pretty powerful. So, I'm going to work a lot with him this week. I'm lucky enough that I've been inside the ropes with some pretty good players, and I do have a little bit of knowledge on how to play. And you know, at some point, I send this. Actually, I'm lucky that I know a lot of golfers. Like I can send this swing to, you know, Billy Harmon, who's, you know, Butch Harmon's brother. He's a friend of mine, and Justin Thomas's dad. I can send it to him and just say, hey, what do you see? What do you think? So it's been, you know, I lean on other people. I'm not afraid to ask, but you know, you know, I don't know that I've been that perfect dad, but I'm trying my hardest. Let's put it that way.
We've been talking to Dan Quinn. Dan, former player with the Flames and the Penguins, and celebrity golf legend. I don't know if they have a celebrity golf Hall of Fame, but you'd certainly be in it, Dan. And of course, your fascinating career as a caddy on the PGA Tour. This has been a distinct pleasure for us. I have found this fascinating, Dan. I wish we had more time. We'll pick up the conversation at another day, another chapter, another time. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate this.
My pleasure. Anytime. You guys, I'll jump back on. Just give me a shout.
Thanks so much, Dan Quinn. Got a few minutes left in the show. It's time for our second and last break, and we'll be right back to wrap it up.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we realised that our extra large pizza is 2 whole inches longer than the so-called extra large from the big pizza conglomerates. How do they even call theirs extra large when Pizzaville gives you 18 whopping inches, steaming hot? Because, let's be honest, who wouldn't want 2 more inches?
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
You won't remember that Real Space Media was once Real Tours Media. What you'll never forget is how they helped you, the real estate agent, sell homes. Or you, the business owner, show off your four walls. Real Space Media has made a name for itself, creating virtual tours and walkthrough floor plans using 3D technology that's light years ahead. In the age of COVID, what better way to see a space safely than through the digital lens of, what were they called again? RealSpaceMedia.ca. Got a space to showcase? Check out Real Space.
Last minute of play in the game.
Unlike sports, the outcome of palliative care isn't determined in the dying seconds. Physically, socially, and spiritually, palliative care is giving someone the best quality of life for however long life remains, while supporting their loved ones. All services are free of charge with partial government funding. the need for palliative care is great. Making an Impact is the newly opened Hospice Vaughn Mario and Nick Cortolucci Hospice Palliative Care Center of Excellence. A truly amazing 10-bed residence, the first palliative care hub in Vaughn. If you share the belief that everyone deserves to live until they die, get involved. Volunteer your time or donate to hospicevaughn.com. We are for community, by community. And together, we are here to serve.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, FM 96.7 in Toronto, and live streaming www.zoomerradio.ca. Naz, we found the bad news yesterday that Angelo Mosca had passed away. And you know what? As soon as I saw that on my phone, it just brought back memories of so many different things. We had Angelo Mosca, of course, a legend in the CFL. His greatest years with the Hamilton Ticats, the big bad Cats from the mid '60s. They were a good but a tough team. Angelo was a tough guy there. He's had a great career as a professional wrestler, King Kong Mosca. And I think his famous line was, Nez, was it "Come and tell me to my face"? That was Angelo Mosca. I'll let you do the impersonation, Nez. You're way better than I am. But Angelo was kind. He was kind to us early in our days on the air. We had just started out. This was back in 2014. We were just, trying to get the word out. Our show was, we wanted always to talk about the legends. We couldn't think of anybody better to talk to than Angelo Mosca. And he, just when we were young, and I wouldn't say young, but when the show was young and struggling, he made time for us. I think we had him on for a good half an hour. He was jovial. He was a gentleman. He was nice to us. And he left an indelible memory, both as a football player. We got an opportunity to chat with him about so many things back in 2014. He made time for us. And all I can say, I'll turn over to you, Naz, but Angelo, thank you for the time you made for us. Thank you for your career, and may you rest in peace. Angelo Mosca. Naz, your thoughts.
He's really good. He's very cooperative, and he didn't want to come off the air that day. Mosca wanted to stay on the air, but he was really good. Really good.
Yeah, and we had fun with him. We talked about his whole career.
Of Argo fans, for sure.
Yeah, no question. I'm sure you got an opportunity to see Angelo play. You're part of our generation. Saw him with the Ticats. Saw him in the professional wrestling. He was certainly a professional wrestling star. And some great commercials. You can come and tell me to my face. Your final thoughts, Lou, on Angelo Mosca?
Well, I remember going to Maple Leaf Gardens with my dad to watch Angelo wrestle with all the Italian greats back then. But I think the most thing that will stand out in my lifetime, wasn't it him that almost I'm not sure if it was a sitcom or something happened on stage that he wanted to challenge somebody with his cane.
I was Joe Cap, and we actually got and it was unfortunate. It was an unfortunate incident. I think both Joe Cap and Angelo Mosca, they both apologized about it. It went back to an incident in the 1963 game, Grey Cup game between the Ticats and the BC Lions, where Angelo took out Willie Fleming, who was the star running back for the BC Lions at the time, took him out, and it was always reputed to be a dirty play, and they sort of got into it at a fundraising event back in, I can't remember, but Angelo was, by this time, Naz, correct me if I'm wrong, he was already in a wheelchair, and they started going at it, and I think Angelo swung his cane at Joe Cap. But having said that, I mean, that's the competitiveness of athletes. Sometimes they don't leave it behind, but they apologize to each other afterwards, I believe, and they also apologize to the people in attendance. I think that's what you're referring to, Luke.
Yeah, you know what? It was funny at the time, but Angelo was the type of guy that he was always serious about things. He was a very, very hard competitor, and everything he did, he tried to do at 100%.
Well, look, Well, him and Joe Capp were the ultimate CFL competitors. So, you know, they left it all out on the field. And I don't know if they bore – I don't know if Joe Capp bore a grudge afterwards, but it was an unfortunate incident for both of them. And, I'm certainly not going to remember Angelo Mosca for that. And I don't think I'm going to remember Joe Capp for that either. Yeah, no question. We once again, Angelo, rest in peace. Thank you for what you did for the Nazanwali Sports Hour in our early days, and to all his family, we wish you our condolences. Naz, we've got a minute left. Bills and Jags today. This is an important game for the Bills because you want home field advantage. 20 seconds or less, Naz.
Oh, they'll kill Jacksonville. Jacksonville's in disarray all over the place. They're not a very good football team, and the Bills should wallop them today.
Well, we certainly hope so. Anyways, it's Remembrance Day this week. It's the 11th hour of the 11th day is the 11th month. Please support our veterans. Show them that we support them. Buy a poppy and wear it proudly. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Have a fantastic and safe week. Thank you for joining us.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.